listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
Welcome back to a brand new episode of the 9to5 Entertainment System. If you enjoy 9ES, and I know you do, Robert, consider supporting us by going to patreon.com/9to5cc and subscribing to the 9ES Deluxe level, which gives you access to Garbage Time, which is a bonus episode that we record after the main episode. On this week's Garbage Time, we talk about Marvel Comics Battle World, actually a lot more comics talk, and Doctor Who. But on this, the main episode, the episode you're listening to right now, we talk about how we are maybe in the end times of finances and the economy. John apologizes to Brian Mulroney. We talk about Dinosaur Dracula, Desert Storm trading cards, Marvel Snap. We give Scott a new best movie ever. And we talk about episode 5 of X-Men 97, the episode that made the internet cry. All this and more. 9ES.
Food and housing and probably transportation and probably, you know, telephony, and maybe there's some other things you could think of that.
Yeah, there's X dollars for necessities that are consumed no matter what level of wealth you're at. I mean, like, you could be eating fancier food, but
until those needs are met, they are going to pervert the value of your dollars. And so the notion of a free market with what's left over, that free market is in fact tainted by your necessity of purchasing those things. Imagine a circumstance where you had like reasonable quality, maybe not great, but reasonable quality food, housing, transportation, and telephony provided for you. Mm-hmm. And you were not obligated to work. But if you did, and you put in, you had $500 in your pocket at the end of the month, those $500 were really, really whatever you want to do.
Yeah,
would
yeah.
you buy a better phone, a better TV, a better, you know, would you pay for experiences like shows and stuff? I think the economy that would emerge from a circumstance like that would be a pure capitalism.
Oh, yeah, well, exactly. Well, that's the big scenario behind like universal basic income, right? Like, which is you just get $1,000. Everybody gets $1,000 a month, regardless of financial circumstance, and that $1,000 can be used. Presumably, I'm saying $1,000, just like whatever.
Picks
X figure. That is presumably for your necessities. After that, you can start to make cool decisions of like, oh, I can as an artist, I can presumably maybe make $1,000 a month or whatever it is. And if my necessities are paid for, maybe that's a lifestyle that I want to do. If I want to have a big fancy car or whatever, I can do something else. But like, to just everybody gets $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like getting to that area, right?
The free market, as Adam Smith initially described it, was free from monopoly. Like, he lived in a time of like the mega psycho robber barons that are like, we're in fact less successful than the technocrats that we have today.
Yeah.
But like the dangers of monopoly and of like industry verticalization, you know, where they control the store at the end, they control the transportation in between. They control whatever.
You just have like this entire, and also nothing is connected, right? Where you're just sort of like, oh, this town is owned by this guy and there's no towns for 100 miles around it. Oh, well.
Yeah, but hope you like the company store. Like people in those circumstances and us are fucked much deeper than we really get to understand, because in an ordinary competitive economy, you know, you would be taxing goods that traveled from each of those steps to the other through some degree of sales taxes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the verticalization robs the economy not only of buying and negotiating power at each of those levels, but also of the tax revenue that would be coming from transfer of goods between each of those steps.
Yeah. I mean, and also I think that there's like a certain element too of, it would be like virtually, actually impossible to have a global monopoly on anything 100 years ago. Right. Whereas you're like, now that's possible. You know, you're just sort of
happen in isolated industries across a wide enough space that like it would happen and people would freak the fuck out. There was a potato monopolization in the States that happened at one point, mm-hmm. where somebody bought all of the potatoes and the potato futures for like whatever X number of time across X and Y number of states, you know, and it totally fucked things. And they all passed a bunch of laws to make sure that it would never happen again. But of course, the like governments are so corrupt that it was like, you know, a law against potato monopolization rather than a law against monopolization.
Nothing to stop like Google.
Right. I really think, like, it grinds my gears when I hear people say it's like capitalism is the problem. Because yes, what we have sucks, but we do not have a capitalism. We don't have, like, an OG capitalism. We also don't have, like, a future socialist hybrid capitalism that I just kind of described where all of our goods are taken care of. And then there's a free capitalism riding on top of it. And those things are all options. And, like, the other things that people have had en lieu of the capitalism that we have now are, like, really still much worse. Like, yes, we can laugh about the number of vacation days a feudal peasant would have had compared to how many we have, which is actually a lot more. But at the same time, they had a lot less standard of living and like, freedoms and ability to travel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, they were also able to, like, you know.
Oh, Scott's here.
Eat food and, like, pick berries and, you know, go oystering. Imagine.
No, like, no. Motherfucker, you got to go and watch the video of Boris Yeltsin in 1960 or 1950-something, 60-something, where he goes to America on, like, one of, like, the first Russo-American trades. Mm-hmm. He goes into like, a grocery store, and he comes out, and he's like, are you fucking with me? That's a grocery store? What are all those things in there? And the panoply of goods that were available was incomprehensible to him.
Like, New York City used to be the place to get the best oysters.
Yeah.
So, like, people would just go down to the shore and dig up some oysters and just be like, man, oysters are awesome. Can you imagine going through the muck of the Hudson River now? Just being like, I'm going to think this into my body.
We were talking about, like, labor disputes and stuff the other day. You're sort of like, oh, are we about to be on the cusp of, like, a massive, like, strike situation and all that stuff with everybody striking and working conditions getting, like, shittier and shittier and all of our benefits and all of the, like, what's the words I'm looking for? Your pensions and all that stuff being cut and so on and so on. And then I was, like, reading an article of, like, how we're so much more significantly in debt today that, like, the possibility of, like, I'm gonna go 6 months on my savings so that I can go on a real strike and, like, take the power back for workers is, like, a nearly impossible, and no one can have that kind of savings because of the debt of a mortgage, because of the debt of credit card, because of the debt of, like, of everything else, which was, like, a debt level that, like, didn't exist 100 years ago when there was, like, the other union. Not to say nobody had debt, but, like, the volume of it is insurmountable for the average person. I don't think most people can possibly consider surviving 6 months without a job, like in a strike situation, right? Where you're not getting EI, you're not getting whatever, you're not getting that stuff on strike.
Okay, but you're excluding yourself from that. There are people who've had, like, reasonable jobs and kept them for 20 years and have enough savings to be on the road to retirement. There are people who do that.
Some people. I count myself as probably one of the last people who can handle that. If you're in your 20s or 30s, and especially think about America and student debt, right? Like, I know a bunch of it's canceled, but if you're sitting on that kind of student debt, you're just like, they just did a whole thing on the whole, like, student debt. You're paying hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month and not, like, and defaulting it on it and not actually, like, putting anything towards the principal. And you're just like, can you just get out from under that, or you're bankrupting yourself? I mean, like,
that shit's a trap.
Yeah, very much a trap. But that's what they're saying is, you're like, the debt trap, which I would say is probably even bigger in the States than it is in Canada, is prevents you from necessarily even imagining a workers rising up and striking in the same way that they could in other points in past. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's a point at which the boot is pressing hard enough that it becomes necessary. And, like, you don't have to worry about 6 months worth of debt or 20 years worth of debt because you're worrying about, like, 2 weeks worth of food.
Yeah, exactly.
That could be in the future, the near future, as global warming pushes, like, you know, agriculture out of the bulk of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, like, whatever. And also, how many industries, too, can a corporation just respond with offshoring? Right?
Mm-hmm.
You're just sort of like, oh, I'm a call center worker. I'm going to go on strike. Actually, this call center is shut down. There they go.
Yeah.
Good luck in the free market. Aww. Anyway.
This is a jump, but it's a good moment, I think. I criticized heavily to Brian Mulroney and, like, maybe two or three podcasts ago. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, I heard a speech given by Elizabeth May, whom I don't always agree with, but I respect quite a lot. And she like had extremely glowing things to say about him. I remembered only his, like, and it's easy to judge him from the 2020 hindsight, you know, of, like, selling Canada's middle class
NAFTA
to China. Yeah, which, like, there's no doubt that that was, like, the road to gutting our country's economy that really got into underway with him, excuse me. But he also, according to her, was the greenest world leader who ever was, and mm-hmm. was, like, almost single-handedly responsible for stopping acid rain. Like, you don't really think about it, but he was, like, driving a bunch of the climate summits that actually dealt with that problem. And she remembered him very glowingly in a bunch of other ways. So I kind of wanted to apologize to her dead.
Well,
former prime minister. He might have been both things. I don't know. I don't know.
I was going to say, people can be both things.
Yeah. Okay, no, los dos. But anyway.
Yeah, I think if you want to go back and take a look at the 80s, John, and think about oil development in Canada, I think you'll see a huge spike there under the reign of Brian Mulroney. And I don't know if that's a glowing endorsement on being super green when he's like, you know.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that happened too. He also might have been under the pressure of somebody accidentally noticing some WMDs up here and deciding to come and sit down and seeing him. Mm-hmm. The, you know, Operation, what was it called? The Gulf War?
Desert Storm. Maybe.
No. It was before Desert Storm. It was Operation Iraqi Liberation. They actually fucking mm-hmm. called it that, right? OIL.
That was the, yeah.
That was the exactly. first one, right? Yeah.
That was the 80s though. Still, I want to say that wasn't.
It was in the 90s. 91, okay. Man. It was Sir Bush the Elder.
Yeah. Man.
Anyway, let's get out of this.
I was gonna say random transition.
Wait. I got one more. I saw a great little argument where the United States was throwing shade on Canada for having very poor air quality in all major Canadian cities, looking at studies last year. And someone on Reddit was like, that was the year of the forest fires everywhere. Most of the time, Canada has, like, much better air in all of their major cities. And the very next comment was like, oh, you think the forest fires are over? You think they're going to stop?
Yeah. We got a lot more of that stuff to go.
Isn't that nice? Don't forget, it's April.
Like, people don't know, right? There's like a huge degree of total ignorance about what happens up here. I remember when I was down in Boston very frequently, like 10 years ago or something, Medicare was in the news because Obama was working on Obamacare.
It was like the dawn of Obamacare.
Yeah. And it was like exactly right then. And in multiple parties, I had people say, oh shit, you're from Canada? You know, like, is your healthcare really all fucked up? Can you, like, what is going on with that? You know? And they had, like, literally no context to compare against what the experiences were. And I was able to say, like, it was right when I moved back from Ottawa back to Montreal. And I was like, okay, so this is my experience. I went from living in Ottawa to Montreal. I had literally no healthcare coverage, identification, ID, anything in the Quebec system. I had to start from zero. And in a morning, I had an asthma attack. I walked into the healthcare center. I had a temporary card and I had a puffer in my hand. Total cost to me $10 in like 4 hours, you know? So, okay, yeah, I had to stand in line in a bunch of places, but I went from zero to medicine and over $15 in 4 hours.
As much as I have and probably will continue to criticize, like, the Quebec healthcare system and its insane wait times and stuff, there is an element of, like, if you transfer the time and excessive waits into real dollars, it's still like...
We're still way fucking ahead.
Exactly, that's it. Like, oh, it took me a really, really long time to see a specialist. That was really messed up. However, like, it didn't cost me anything.
Percentage of human beings living in Canada who were crippled economically for the remainder of their life by a medical event, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is that percentage? Not
exactly.
Too big. Yeah.
Pretty much. But yeah, my desert storm transition, or not transition, was, so I got into, what's his name? Scott, you will know this. Is Devil Dracula, X Entertainment became... Dino Dracula.
Dracula.
Yeah. There you go. That's what I was going
to
say.
Desert Storm to Dino Dracula.
I followed Dinosaur Dracula on Facebook. And it's not great because he doesn't have as many articles as you would like from, like, some of his X Entertainment and even some of his Dino Drac stuff. But, like, it is just, like, often him just, like, sharing random crap from his collection, which is insane. And he was like, let me stress to you, as a child, like, as an American child in the 1990s, everything had camouflage on it. And he's like, here's my Ninja Turtles lunchbox with camouflage on it. He's like, Desert Storm was all over the place and marketed to kids. I was like, What the hell? That's so weird. But like,
who's Dinosaur Dracula?
I have. He's a blogger. He's a blogger.
Okay. So you don't remember way back in the late '90s, early 2000s, there was a blog called X Entertainment that was like really funny and real good. Like they did a lot of like retro blogging of just being like, let's just watch this. Like before any of this was like defined on the internet, it was just going to be like, here's an entire article just like dissecting season 3, episode 5 of He-Man. Like not like we're dissecting all of He-Man or whatever.
It's going deep.
Here's this one and like literally like 1,000-2,000 word article on one episode of He-Man. And
he would do things that was ahead of the game in terms of like, not collecting action figures exclusively, but Sears catalogs. And do you have a VHS copy of a movie you taped in your family and you're putting that on eBay? I will pay $3 for that. And I will
love it.
I will critically dissect everything on this tape. The movie,
right.
The weird commercial overdubs, and all of the commercials. And that's going to be my job for the next week.
Yeah, some of the and the weirdest stuff was the old food packages. Mm-hmm. Like, do you have old like frozen Flintstones? Yeah, just weird stuff. He's like, it's gray, and he still sips it. He's like, eh.
Did he do breakfast cereals? Because I feel like the '80s were full.
Yes, he's
branded done so, branded he's, breakfast cereals.
He's done so many breakfast cereals.
He did ice cream. He's like, look, it's the real Ghostbusters ice cream bar. You're like, don't do that, sir.
Please do not eat that. That's great.
How did they even ship that?
Anyway, I discovered that he has a podcast. So he only posts it monthly, but it's still updated. Yeah, Purple Stuff. It's fun. It's not great. It's so much of what they're talking.
He's so neurotic.
He's crazy. Well, and so is he's completely crazy.
Like he does this stuff so I don't have to.
Yeah, and is obsessed with things in like in a probably an unhealthy way, but I feel that like he's adapted to it to make it his day job, so it's okay. Right.
So long as you don't have to live in his house.
Yeah, the McNugget Buddy board game. He was just sort of like, oh, there's a McNugget Buddy board game. And then they're just like, and then the other guy's talking about it. And he's like, I figured this was like either like a small box or it was like one of those things where you would have like elements of a Happy Meal that combined to this thing. And he's like, this guy busts out a box that's like 4 times bigger than Monopoly. So there's like a Halloween themed McNugget Buddies board game that came out in like 2002. And they're just like, we have to play it.
I want to stress that this is Keith and I both saying this guy goes way over the line in terms of collecting stuff.
Okay. And like, he's talked about it too. Like he talks about the fact that he's like, if I like remember a thing from my childhood, I then have to have it and will like stop at no expense. He made a bunch of his money like buying and selling like eBay lots and stuff, because like he could eyeball from photos what actual value is in. So he was like, he could grab like someone's like selling, I'm selling this box of old toys, and like from a couple photos he was like, okay, two of these I'm going to be able to like, for like he was talking about it on like one interview, whatever, he was like, there was a whole stretch of time in the early 2000s where he was like, I was just supporting myself on eBay, where it was like buying stuff, buying and selling, generating content for the website, getting a bunch of stuff, because he was like, even though I knew the things that were valuable, I got a whole bunch of things to like play with, which was valuable to me. And he was like, and then like circling back and doing whatever, which is kind of fun for a hustle, I guess, if you're really into buying crap and having it. But yeah, his house must be insane. Like, it's so
That's
much
awesome.
Stuff.
Anyway. He's a great read, and he again, does a lot of that stuff, so I don't have to.
Mm-hmm. He's a better writer than podcaster, which is a bummer that he doesn't write more. Like, because like as a podcaster, he just it's kind of him just like giggling to himself at the insane shit that he owns. Whereas I feel that if he
in his writing, he's a lot. He puts a lot of autobiographical stuff in it and personal context.
Yeah,
into stuff, and it's an interesting personal, funny without being like overly sarcastic or cynical about stuff kind of read. Mm-hmm. That makes him a good read.
One of my favorite things that I like, one of the ex-entertainment things that like sticks out to me was when he was talking about for Christmas, he always asked for the big yellow Crayola box because he liked to align. He liked to put out all of his toys that he got for Christmas in like a spread. He's like, no one took photos for this. It was only for like my mind's eye. And I thought that the big yellow Crayola box in the middle of the spread was like very pleasing to the eye. So his parents are always like, you got a Crayola box last year. He's like, I want another one. It was just like, it just stuck out to me as like this insane little kid who every year, despite whatever else he's getting for Christmas, wants the big Crayola box in the middle for the centerpiece of his toy spread that he just sets out. And he's like, that's a good haul. And then just takes everything and starts playing with it.
If you want to check it out, Dinosaur Dracula, it's the first thing in Google. I think it's dinosaurdracula.com.
Did he port the old X Entertainment stuff over, or is that like lost to time?
Oh, it's still there. I think Entertainment is still published.
Because he sold it to a weird one of the like when the blog started consolidating, he like sold it off, and then because he couldn't do it anymore, and it turned to crap. Like it stopped just being him. There turned to be like other guys, and they sold the brand, and it became on the I want to say Yugo. Do you remember the Yugo network?
Not at all.
Like it was like Yugo blogs or whatever else. So I think it like was like became like Yugo.xentertainment or whatever in the world of like trying to determine what Dig and Reddit would eventually become. And he was like, oh, I'm going to go. And he started, I think he worked on a sitcom or did some writing and cartoons or whatever. And then I don't even know what he's doing now other than just being an insane person.
He's selling boxes, like subscription boxes of garbage stuff he's gotten from eBay.
His random crap.
Yeah.
How do you unload a garage, multiple garages full of old like 90s garbage?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be, I might subscribe for a month or two, because if there was ever a subscription box that I'd be like pretty into, it would be mass random shit from Dinosaur Dracula.
Well, to cycle it back there, I'm definitely sure he's put some Desert Storm trading cards in those boxes before.
Oh yeah. He's talking. I remember there was a whole article about those. He's like, what is happening with any of this?
I had them.
Desert Storm what?
Trading cards.
Ugh. Like, not cool.
Weird. Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney. It's his rookie card. Got it. Freaking Sidewinder missiles. Sean.
Stats on the back.
Sidewinder missiles. Oh, this is a Scud missile. That's the bad guy. John,
wow. This,
I was 13, 1991. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had like 100 of those cards just floating around my room, mixed in with my hockey and football and baseball cards.
But why? Was your mom like, what?
Man, there were trading cards of everything, and you just had to get some.
Yeah.
And they were also like 50 cents a pack, man. Like, I have a box full of Marvel Overpower. I have like 700 cards.
I had Overpower. They had the super nice art on them, didn't they? It was like
they were textured like playing cards, but the art was like so. It was weird.
Okay, I remember like a set of like Marvel branded playing cards or like trading cards that were like super nice art, and they were like late 90s, I want to say.
Probably mid 90s. You're thinking of the Marvel Masterpiece collection.
Maybe that's what it was.
Because there was the 91 and the 92 run of like the classic Marvel cards with like, here's the guy and the little bio and the stats. Mm-hmm. And then there was, I remember probably 94, 95, I think there was the Marvel Masterpiece runs. And that was like the all.
Joe Driscoll working super hard.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Any
painter that wasn't Alex Ross was like, I can do this.
Yeah.
Well, I very much remember those. They were pretty cool.
Overpower was also not cool. It was a completely unplayable game.
It was a CCG?
Yep.
I don't think it was necessarily unplayable so much as it was just war with three suits. you're just play the big numbers. Like it was playable, but the game was war. There just happened to be three suits. And it was play big numbers. Yeah. The end. I remember when they expanded more, digging deep, going into X Entertainment territory, when they had, like, in the late era of Overpower, they branched out to DC,
mm-hmm.
and they added, like, a fourth suit, like Mind or whatever it was, and that was, like, the DC thing. So, I don't know, whatever.
And the DC one also didn't use that airbrushed art. They used like comic art and it looked weird.
Yeah, that's it. It's super weird. How far we've come. Now we play Marvel Snap.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken the Marvel CCG online. Scott and I have learned nothing.
I mean, I've not paid any money for Snap yet, so I've learned that.
That's true. I feel you paid probably getting close to your Marvel Overpower money in Snap.
I probably spent about $70 or $80 on Overpower.
Yeah, that's probably where I'm at.
There you go.
I buy the monthly pass most months.
Just make sure to take lots of screenshots so in 20 years you can write your blog about it.
This is Marvel Snap. I do take a lot of screenshots. I have a whole chat with you in it. Oh, man. We're not even going to talk about the game, but holy crap. I hate the Reddit so much. It rustles my jimmies so much.
It's not even funny anymore.
It's the Snap subreddit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
Everyone loses in this game.
Okay.
It's a game of like, when do I double down and when do I retreat?
Yeah, the margin between like the best decks and the shittiest decks is like a 5-7 win percentage. And the absolute best deck maybe has like a high 50s, low 60s win percentage. And like a shitty deck that you kind of threw together, you can still probably win 50-50. Like the game is, when do you snap and when can you read on the other person's team? Like that's the game. A good deck will do pretty okay. That's the game.
It's
carry on, Scott.
It's Marvel branded blackjack.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't really matter how cool the cards look. You can just kind of look at what's going on and be like, I'm out. Or double up, let's go. Mm-hmm. And if you're
Identifying the river, identifying the flop, like you're just
if you play enough and can identify that, eventually you move up the ranks. Right? You have to put in enough time with a little bit of skill so the odds end up in your favor to move up. And if you're bad at it or you lose a lot, you go to the Reddit and you're just like, everything sucks about this game and it's the rules' fault.
They're ruining the meta and you have to keep up with the new cards and you like 100% do not have to. Like, like some of my most competitive decks maybe have like one or two of the like more rare cards, but if you're playing free, completely free, you can easily obtain one or two cards. Like identify the cards that like match your play style and you can like have a good read on and grab those ones. You do not need every card to be competitive, like at all. Like,
Archer's got a high win rate deck and he's collection level 2000. He's fine. He's fine. It's like I'm collection level almost 12,000. So Archer plays like 5% as much as I do. And his deck is fine. It's good. He wins.
And yeah, that's it. I mean, like I said, like there's an arc, like the cards are split up into like series 1 through 5, with 5 being the most rare. And like one of the genuinely like perennial competitive decks is all of series 3 and 2 series 4, 0 series 5 cards. And that is a like a competitive deck that you could easily rank with if you have a read on the play.
Yeah.
Calm down, everyone. But it's just people are so mad about any of the monetization, and I'm like, whatever. And it's like, it's a mobile game, so obviously there's absurd bundles. Like for $150, don't buy them. People buy them to sustain the game.
It's hats. It's Fortnite hats. That's what it is. It's just all hats.
None of it has to do with in-game stuff. It's all like skins for
90% of it is skins.
Okay.
And I mean, and in a roundabout way, though, you'll accumulate resources, which will ultimately get you new cards. But it's almost never pay $10 for a new card. It's like, it's fine. People just get so mad. They're like, this isn't sustainable, the economy, whatever. And I have to sit there and grind and whatever. And I was like, for some reason, I guess I was bored. I like entered into the conversation.
Jimmy's got rustled.
And got my Jimmy's rustled. And I was just sort of like, do people just like forget that this is how you can, a way for you to obtain cards? People are like, it's so stupid when you're putting up this much time and they're not giving you anything in resolve. And I was like, you understand that the time you put in the game, like the default thing of the game is supposed to be fun. If it feels like chore to grind to get the resources, don't play the game. Like I was like, you're playing a game for free that should be fun on your default. And then you get a certain amount of rewards for free. And then if you pay money, you get more rewards. Like people are like, oh, free players can only accumulate about like a third of the cards as like players who like buy all the time. And I was like, imagine going to a restaurant and they were like, for free, you can get a third of the plate. And you're like, no, this is unfair. And they're like, also, no, it's different because, you know, like at a restaurant, whatever, I'm not grinding and putting the time in. And I was like, but the core activity is fun. It's a game. Like,
it's also not true. I'm CL 2000 and I put $0 in the game. And
yeah,
the reason I don't hit,
you have almost every card you want.
Yeah. I mean, I pretty much do. And I'll get the ones that I don't eventually. Whatever. And the reason I don't hit infinite every month is mostly because I don't play as much as people who hit infinite. And those people, because they play so much more, are more inclined to pay a little bit more to get ahead or get what they want or get the funny card backs or get the Spider-Man in the black costume. Like, it doesn't matter.
I hit infinite every month because I'm really good.
Yes, you're good. You enjoy the game. You play a lot.
Which I don't. Is that how it should be?
You enjoy that's it, how it should be. You play a lot, which makes you good. Like,
it's true though. I feel there was like a thing where just someone's like, "Why can't I rank?" And they're like, "Cause you're not good at the game." And I'm not saying this like to insult you. You're like, the game is about snapping and knowing when to snap and knowing when you can like get double or quadruple the rewards of a normal game. Mm-hmm. That's the game. It has nothing to do with your deck. Not to say nothing to do, but like you can go online and like just see a tier one deck and just copy paste it. It's 12 cards. It's not that complicated. Mm-hmm. Knowing how that deck works and when to snap, that's the game. You're like, and like Scott said, if you play more, you like. I remember when Scott and I started playing. It was like,
why am I not? Scott was like, man, how much do you draw? I never draw. It's hard. It sucks. Like, well, okay, well then, look, you're bad at drawing then.
Yeah, and I think that like poker and black, like. Poker especially, right? Like, the game of poker is simple. Why do some people do it for millions of dollars and the rest of us just get to, like, play it for shits on a Friday? Those guys play it a lot and know the numbers and know the cards and know what every card means and knows what the percentage means and what those odds means and what they think their players are going to do. That's what makes them real good at the game.
Like, I mean, often it's not even the odds. Often it's reading the people who are there. There isn't there – I forget what the guy's name is. I've watched him play a bunch of times. He'll, like
– Daniel Negreanu.
That guy, exactly. You know him. I don't even have to fucking say his name. And it's like he's playing some guys like, I'm gonna call you. You're on a 9 or a 10, and the guy's fucking sitting on a 9 and a 10. It's like it's crazy how well he can read people.
But yeah, you can kind of do that in Snap too. If you see A and B, you're like, well, that's probably C that's gonna come. And
it's again like there's 200 something cards and your deck is 12, right? There's only like so many sets of cards that kind of go together. As soon as I see your like one or two of your plays, even though I'm not looking at you and reading your tells, your deck has tells. Yeah. So I can be like, are you on curve? Are you going to play? What is this? Like Scott and I used to joke like when we started playing of being like, man, I don't get people that like retreat round one. Sometimes I'll retreat round one now because I'm just like, I was like, I do not have my cards. I see his one drop. I'm like, meh, whatever. It's a bad location. Get out of here. Save my time. Like, because
Death's Domain. Deadpool drops in there. You're just like, oh, okay. I'm out.
See you later. That's fine. Like, unless I have something specific for that play, I'm like, no, I'm not going to sit there and waste time. I'm just going to read. And again, the games are like 2 minutes long, so who cares? I'll just play another one. Like, but yeah, it's the most entitled I've ever seen someone. Because I've seen some, like, heavy predatory mobile games where
okay hold on, hold on. That you've seen mobile games, have you seen heavy predatory MOBA games where you play and then you're trapped for the next 45 minutes in a match with somebody who clearly has no idea what they're doing or who's fucking up your game, and it's like a team game where you are dependent upon that person not fucking up to have a chance
that,
of winning.
That sounds the like a rage, nightmare, and I know that is the
rage that comes out of people is unbelievable. Actually, it's not unbelievable. It's totally believable. It's just very unfortunate.
Yeah, and exactly that, and that's what I think makes the Marvel Snap like viscera on Reddit so irritating to me. Is I'm like, it's a game that the entry point is free. There may be problems with acquisition, whatever. It's fine, but ultimately the match is 2 or 3 minutes. If you're not having fun in those 2 or 3 minutes, what are you possibly doing opening up this game to play it? Like I said, I think Sarah's bought maybe 1 or 2 monthly passes. Sarah plays it sometimes on like quiet months, a lot. Sometimes she sits back. She's like, I don't know, CL 3000 or whatever else, and has gotten almost every card she wants. She has enough tokens that if something comes out that she really wants, she wants. She's not going to get every card, but she still having fun. And I was like, and that's the game, people. Like, to be like, I'm a free player and I demand to be able to like be series complete with all the cards. I was like, buddy, wait till I tell you how actual collectible card games work. Did you know there is no free option and you have to buy every card? Like, and if you think that's crazy, let me tell you about a little thing called Warhammer 40K. Not only is everything insanely expensive, they don't even come ready to play. You must spend hours painting them and then buy expensive books and then also have all of this. Boy, you're going to have dropped like several hundred dollars to play one round of Warhammer 40K. Fucking people.
Yeah, and God help you if you glue the wrong gun on your guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially with the serious people.
The Klingons. It was always the Klingons.
Speaking of Klingons, this is a terrible segue, but Klingons are in movies. I did it.
Yeah.
I did it. It's incontrovertible. Scott, you're due a movie.
Mm-hmm.
This, I'm trying to find, like, this movie doesn't have a Wikipedia page, despite having, like, a number of famous people involved.
Because they want to hide it.
For sure they want to hide it. I'm trying to find the IMDb page. It came out in 2018 or 2019.
Modern.
It's kind of Marvel related.
Kind of. Marvel adjacent.
Okay, that's fair.
I'm trying to get to the cast. It features some recognizable cast members, for sure.
Including?
Like, did you ever watch The League? Are familiar?
I'm familiar with The League.
Steve Ranazzisi. It's one of the main characters of The League, right? It's like there's like the four guys. Amy Smart.
Okay, I know her.
Exactly. She's like, again, these are recognizable actors.
Yeah, she was in Starsky and Hutch and mm-hmm. all kinds of those movies.
The Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Fan favorite. Ooh, man.
Just a real sideswipe there. I just saw an interview with Rob Van Dam where he skewers Shawn Michaels. He hates that man.
He's kind of an easy target.
He's just like, I can't stand Shawn Michaels' insincerity, and he gives backhanded compliments to him all the time. He inducted his buddy from ECW into the Hall of Fame, and Shawn was like, man, Rob, that was like a real smart, educated, like really well spoken, and I was surprised. Rob was just like, oh my god, I hate you so much. Shawn Michaels in a movie. Oof.
Yep. Will it make it more appealing to you that Shawn Michaels plays a parody of Yoda?
No.
Scott's
no.
face.
No. I mean, just as a lifelong Bret Hart fan, I'm already anti-Shawn Michaels, so.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that guy. Oh,
my God, this looks so dumb.
That's so good.
The best is that right now on my IMDb page, recently it's the recently viewed. It's the poster for this film and Fanny and Alexander next side by side. They're like, what's this guy's IMDb information about? I wish I could find more about this film, and I really should have looked up like who directed this. I can only seem to find the cast.
I mean, the YouTube thing is pretty awesome.
Just the trailer. The trailer alone is worth it. Did you know Diminishing Returns, Crank?
I can't find a thing about this.
It's wonderful. While trying to remain a good husband and father, Superbat and the Avengers of Justice come out of retirement to stop Dark Jokester and Lisp Luthor from freezing the planet.
Oh my god, it's another parody film.
It's Avengers of Justice. Hang on, there's a tagline. Farce Wars.
God, I had to do Remember the Spartans last time.
This one, man.
How did Marvel not sue them into oblivion?
I have no concept.
It's weird.
It's and again, recent.
Yeah.
Scott, are you watching it? You can watch it live for our listeners. Just watch the trailer live.
I just Googled it, and it's a picture of a green Shawn Michaels looking
that's
all
the best.
Crazy-eyed.
He looks like Yoda, huh?
Yeah, Yoda. Exactly. He's Hulk Yoda. lists, and again, this came out after the league. What was Steve like, Razanusi, whatever his name is, doing? What was Amy Smart doing? These are like, I'm not saying they're A-listers by any means, but like, how do you land in this film?
Oh,
I think it's because you never know. You never know if it's going to be like really wickedly clever or if the writers.
It appears to be on Amazon Prime. So Scott can watch it.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, I'm watching the trailer right now as you guys vamp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are no details about this movie. Okay, so it was directed by Jarrett Tarnell. Let's find out what Jarrett Tarnell wrote. He did April Apocalypse, which I don't know what that is. Jarrett Tarnell. Tarnell. This is great off podcasting. Jarrett Tarnell seems to see you in Valhalla. Barrio Tales. I've never heard of any of these. But like somehow, I guess, has a career. I suppose. Oh, wait, I know this guy. Jarrett Tarnell looks very familiar.
Maybe we saw him at Fantasia.
He has a very familiar face. I can't show you his face, but yeah. Anyway, this movie, it popped up on a wrestling group. Someone was just sort of like, what? And I was like, oh, for sure this was like, this has to be from like the 90s or whatever, because it's like a dumb Shawn Michaels movie where they were all trying to make movies. But you're like, no, this came out like 2018, 2019, depending on the release. It's bananas. And it looks fine. Like from the like production budget, it looks like a low budget comedy. Like it doesn't look like complete dog shit. Starring recognizable people from like successful televisions and movies. And it just seems to be a terrible, terrible like Justice League / Avengers ripoff parody. It looks insane.
Yeah.
And it combines. Scott? Thoughts?
I don't know how they finished making the trailer of like scouring this movie for the best bits of it and put together a minute and 30 seconds of that. And being like,
none of it looks good.
This is what's going to make us the money for all the work we've just done.
This is the best we have to offer.
Ooh. In some ways, it looks significantly worse than Remember the Spartans. In that, Remember the Spartans had a lot of tastelessness and like dated topical. Jokes.
Yeah, it was just reference humor, right? It was just reference humor.
But at some point, someone was like, this is a joke. And I don't get that from that trailer.
It looks like, almost like it's just like a weird, like, heartfelt, like, him trying to be a dad movie, but, like, surrounded by complete stupidity. Like, he seems to be taking it, like, Steve Rezanizzi. Like, seems to be taking the role pretty seriously in that trailer. Like, he's giving it his all as like a down and out bat guy. Like, and everyone else in the trailer is in like batshit bonkers like garbage town.
Oh god, it looks like he is excited to be in this project, and everyone else in the movie managed to convince their English professor to do a movie as their final project. And it's like, we don't have to do a book report, man. We did a video. We're going to wheel in the TV on the cart. That's what it looks like. Oh, you bastards.
I mean, it combines your favorite things, like pro wrestling, Star Wars, and comic books. So how could it go wrong? How could it not be tailor-made for
you? I think it
starts
with the trailer.
That's went wrong.
Generally, it looks worse than Remember the Spartans, and that was a movie I hated.
When I saw it, I was like, this literally, I mean, I know like of varying degrees, I was like, this literally seems to be actively shitting on three things that Scott is a genuine fan of.
What was Shawn Michaels thinking? Was he really thinking like, man, that Dave Bautista guy just worked with Denis Villeneuve?
What does he have that I don't?
He used to do machine guns with his arms. I could do that.
I'm just going to be buffed up Yoda to train shitty Batman.
Wow.
It's so weird. It's, and again, like, I think a lot like, it's, a more modern example, but like it seems like a lot like Tiptoes. I was like, this movie has to be being actively suppressed, but somehow if it's on Prime Video, I don't like, they're not doing a good enough job. Someone still has the distribution rights to it and is making money from it. Because I don't think anyone, here's the thing, I don't think anyone's quite famous enough to like really like suppress it the way
Tiptoes was.
Gary Oldman.
Yeah, Gary Oldman and Tyrion. Tyrion Lannister. What's his name? Come on now.
It's racist.
It's not racist.
You said it and it pushed it out of my head.
His name was Robert Paulson. Peter Dinklage. I didn't even
know. Hey, he did it.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Like Game of Thrones, HBO money, and Gary Oldman combined to make Tiptoes impossible to find. Whereas I don't think anybody involved with Avengers, Farce Wars, whatever this is, Justice Avengers.
Maybe it's really funny.
I hope so. Like, that would be, I think, the ultimate twist, is if, like, the trailer is poorly cut and, like, Scott comes back and he's like, guys, you know what? They just landed, every joke landed. These guys respected the source material, lampooned it perfectly. Home run all around.
The thing is...
A lost gem.
The thing is, that movie exists about the retired superhero living in suburbia who has to go back to fight the great villain, and it's called The Incredibles.
Yeah, I was going to say, The Incredibles.
It is perfect.
Incredibles is a really good movie.
Yeah, it's a perfect movie.
It's Watchmen for kids.
It's yeah. With Jason Lee.
Kind of. Exactly.
That and Wrench.
Oh,
but yeah, no, this does not look like The Incredibles. You're welcome.
It was like The Incredibles, like they'd seen The Incredibles,
I guess. And then they were like, "What if it was shitty Batman?"
Yeah.
Yeah. No. As soon as I saw that trailer, I wrote on. There's a little post-it on my computer right now that says Steve Razzazazazaz and a bunch of Z's, and then it says superhero movie, because I kept forgetting what it was called, but I was like, I need to write this on a post-it so that when it's Scott's turn, I will remember that this is the movie he must watch.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Ray. It's good. Speaking of superhero stuff, X-Men 97 made everyone sad this week.
Sure did. Are we going to spoil X-Men 97?
Do it. I saw a post on it. People were really pissed off about it, or sad, or something.
This is your fair warning. If you're not caught up, sad stuff happened.
And not only does sad stuff happened that, at least to me, and I mean, you are the premier comics historian, happened in a way that like doesn't happen in the comics with those two characters. Like, at least not that timing.
Nope.
Like... So not even something that you could be like, I've read the comics and this will be how it goes. Like Storm getting depowered earlier in the season. You're like, yeah, Storm gets depowered. That's a thing. It happens. Magneto taking control of the X-Men for a little while Charles is gone. They get there via a different route, but also happens. There's a lot of events happen that are rooted deeply in the comics. And in episode 5.
Well, here's the secret for that. The episode 4. Mojo and Jubilee never square off mano a mano. So like they're letting you know they're ready to go off script.
Yeah. Which was also a great episode. Motendo was a great episode.
And then way better than Life Death.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, boy, you put this in the wrong order. Do I care about like Forge and Storm being like, but I have no powers? And he's like, but I did it. I did it with my technology. Do I love you? I don't know if I love you or not. And I was like, boy, this is, I get it. It's X-Men, so I'm here for the soap opera shit. It's fine. But I'm like, why have that as your second half when the first half was like Jubilee and Sunspot get sucked into like Motendo, which is Mojo's new video game platform.
And it's like, 16 bits.
They have to do like fights in 16-bit and stuff as all the people on Mojo World are like cheering and screaming. It's the what do you call it? The Grindhouse Dilemma. Put them in the wrong order. The serious thing goes at the front. The crazy thing goes at the back. Send home everyone home happy.
Hot take on Life Death. It was a Chris Claremont 80s classic drawn by Barry Windsor Smith. People love it. And I think it is the worst classic X-Men story ever made. It is boring and weird and spiritual by two white dudes talking about an African goddess and a Native American shaman. And it's
wow.
They were doing their best.
Come at me. People love it. It is considered a classic in that Dark Phoenix, Days of Future Past, God Loves, Man Kills. People put Life Death up there. It is boring and shitty and wrong and weirdly culturally ignorant.
Would you summarize the story a little bit? You hit a lot of interesting subjects. Okay.
All right. We're not even into one I want to talk about, but Storm loses her powers because Forge, whose mutant power is to be a technical inventor, he can visualize something and know how to make it, gets tricked basically by the government into making a weapon that can remove mutant powers from people. And as soon as he's done it, Henry Gyrick picks it up and shoots Storm with it. And Why? Then Storm goes through a whole crisis of like, well, because Storm's an omega level mutant who could at any point just destroy large portions of the world.
Yeah, she could hit like Manhattan with a tsunami like now, like with no warning or whatever. And
she could also solve, you know, global warming and agricultural disasters.
Well, she doesn't though, because humans did that to them. And remember, humans did that.
That sucks.
She mostly uses it to throw lightning bolts at Dr. Doom.
Heed my commands.
And Forge's gun shoots her and takes all her powers away. She goes through a whole character revolution.
Which, to be fair, the show sets up a lot better. The show seems to be that the government took that weaponry, weaponized it, and then like someone has stolen that and is using it as kind of like a human terrorist against the mutants. Like, Storm getting shot with it is significantly better in the cartoon than how she gets shot with it in the comics.
Yeah. Gyrick basically picks it off a table. He's like, oh, that's the gun.
Pew! Versus all the political background of the show.
Not knowing that it was Forge's gun, she goes to stay on his ranch. She tries to reconnect with her spiritual side, even though she doesn't have command of the elements. He is like a weird Native American shaman, mystic spellcaster as well, because in the war, he cast a spell to save a bunch of his troops under his command and then accidentally made a deal with a demon who's coming, called the Adversary, and it's coming back to like the tally, the scales or whatever. Just X-Men things. They fall in love. She finds out he was the one who invented the gun. She slaps him. And then he's like, I invited you here also to try to find a way to cure, but I'm still working on it. So you got to stay anyways. It's long and it's boring and it's tons of Claremont dialogue. Which,
it's like high melodrama.
Which Claremont dialogue, when you're reading people fighting and stabbing each other with metal claws, is a lot of reading. Uh-huh. When you're reading about them being like, I don't understand how you could do this to me. I didn't mean to do this to you. It turns into Twilight. Let's ride horses and look, it's raining. She's like, I don't want to get wet. And it's like, well, you're going to have to live with that.
The rain once listened to your commands.
Yeah,
it does no longer. Like all this. Yeah.
It's drawn by Barry Windsor Smith, who considers himself an capital A artist. And it's very flimsy and flighty and wavy. And I fucking hate this comic. I've always hated this comic. And I've always hated that it's become such a seminal X-Men comic. Because it's...
And perhaps worse still is we saw that it was Life Death Part 1, which means that they're going to spend more time on Life Death than they did on Inferno.
Yeah.
which is also backhandedly infuriating.
And it was part 2 of like a 15-minute split episode where the first part is Jubilee on Mojo World in a 16-bit beat-em-up game, which was great and hysterical.
It's super fun.
Punching pixels and sentinels and super fun.
Cut to episode 5.
Love triangle. Magneto, Rogue, Gambit.
It's accurate. This is an accurate love triangle. So, yeah.
In the comic books, it was Rogue being a bad guy for a long time and showing up in the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. They had cross paths in the past, and Rogue and Magneto discovered that he was able to touch her without her power going off. His electromagnetic field protected him from her power. So she was never, so like being someone who had never given anyone a real high five before, they got close. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, wait, no, he's actually a terrorist and I don't agree with him. And that was part
and
of her.
Twice my age.
I was going to say, I guess that was just in the movies, but no, it's also this.
No. Very, very much in the comics also. I don't think it's as much of a, it's not presented, but like as a reader, I was like, Charles and Magneto are old and the students are young. And even though, yes, she was in the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants or whatever, we're led to believe that. Yeah, exactly. Like we're led to believe that she's about the age of the original X-Men who were high school age when Charles started the school. So you're like, however, you don't necessarily have to spell the ages out, but you're like, Magneto is easily twice her age.
Right.
If yeah. not more.
If you're going 40 and 20, you're just like, that's fine.
That's as good as it gets for this couple.
Gambit, of course, is jealous of her being around Magneto now that he's back in the school. And they go to Genosha to like do diplomatic stuff to have Genosha join the United Nations now as a nation of mutants. Mutants can be openly mutants and their mutant government is run by mutants and it's a whole thing.
As a result, there'll be a mutant sitting on the UN as a representative of Genosha. Good stuff.
Okay.
So they send a giant kaiju sentinel to Genosha to kill everyone.
Well, the future.
Who's they?
The future.
Humanity.
But from the future.
No, you don't know it's from the future. Cable's
yeah, you
from
do.
The future. No, you don't.
Because Cable shows up and he's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, because Cable's from the future. And he's like, it's coming. He's just like, knows what's going to happen. So he's just trying to warn people.
I guess.
The Sentinel is from Trask and the Friends of Humanity and Gyrick. Gyrick knows it's coming.
I guess. I thought it was a future sentinel.
No, it's a thing. Like it, the fact that it looks like a giant cockroach with three sentinel heads is straight out of the comics from Cassandra Nova.
Yeah, I know that. I was going to say that. That's the Cassandra Nova sentinel.
Yep.
So,
and it kills a bunch of people, and Gambit and Rogue kind of break up, and they're pissed off, and then Rogue decides that she was wrong, and she doesn't actually want to be with Magneto, and can really love Gambit as the Sentinel lands and starts attacking, so she doesn't really get a chance to tell him. So Gambit rides his motorcycle, jumps into this giant Sentinel. The Sentinel stabs him with a
no, you're wrong order. Gambit goes second. Magneto goes first, trying to protect Leech.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He said, "You told me not to be afraid," and then he says, "Don't be afraid," but in
German.
In German? Because why would Leech understand that? Is Leech German?
No, it's because it's what his parents said to him just before.
Yeah, during the Holocaust. I understood why he said it. I just don't understand why he said it to the little boy who does not speak German. Like, I was like, this sounds like it's about you and not the little kid you're trying to soothe in his final moments.
I don't think he's trying to soothe the kid in his final moments. So the Sentinel is about to kill everyone and Magneto is shielding this kid and says, you know, you don't have to be afraid, but in German, before they both get mostly obliterated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So Gambit.
Isn't the Sentinel made out of metal? Can't Magneto just like fuck it up?
No, new Sentinels are not made out of metal.
They're like ceramic.
They're very aware of Magneto.
Okay.
He does throw a train at it.
He fights the train fight is amazing. Like it's like a monorail style train that he's just like whipping, like punches him in the face and then is like whipping it around like a whip, trying to like smash it through like full like monorail sized train to all smash right,
so,
it through.
So let's
and it's
go
amazing.
Let's go with the two symbols there. Humanity's attempt in Genosha, where they slaved mutants using a whip to fight back at the giant Sentinel.
Holocaust trains.
Holocaust train number two, Magneto using a train to fight the people trying to commit genocide. It's like
The show is a home run.
The show is a home run. Gambit tries to blow up the Sentinel, throws a bunch of things at it, throws his motorcycle at it. The Sentinel spears him with one of the tendrils.
It's an all-time death. Like, I was like, I knew because the stupid internet had spoiled who was going to die. I just didn't know how. Yeah, exactly. It sucks. So I was like, I knew Gambit wasn't going to make it, but I was like, what's Gambit going to do? And
the Sentinel lifts him up while being impaled on this tendril to like put him nose to nose. And it's like, mutant identify. And Gambit goes like, the name is Gambit. Remember it. Which is like one of his catchphrases from the cartoon. And he grabs the tendril and he charges the whole Sentinel up. Oof. Like the kaiju sized.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So Godzilla, like, it and he explodes, but like, it's great. It's just like, you see his pink charge, like whipping through the giant tendril into the Sentinel and stuff. I was like, that's amazing. That's an on-screen death.
Yeah. And then the whole thing explodes and Rogue is the one who finds his body. And he is very clearly on-screen dead.
Yeah.
There's no, like,
not that anybody stays dead in comics, but you know,
yeah.
But like, there's no off-panel shenanigans.
Cool.
And then crying, she's like touching him with her bare hands, and she's like, "I can't feel you." And it broke a lot of people. People were really, real sad by it.
Then cue the theme song, but sad. So it's like doo 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 doo
doo on piano. Two credits. Yeah.
Yeah. Choked up Sarah. Like.
Did it?
Yeah.
Gotta, there were people on Reddit who were like, this is the saddest piece of animation ever made. And I was like, oh, friend.
Well, Sarah's also like, no bones about it. Like, Sarah's like my childhood crush on the X-Men. I have a 1-2 Gambit Magneto. Like, she's like, those are like...
Magneto?
Yeah. She's like when, especially when she's like, oh, he's so hot without his helmet. I was like... Super weird. My wife is a strange person. But she was like, yeah, childhood crush was like 1-2 punch with Magneto and Gambit. I don't know, white hair, something. Glowy pink eyes. I listen, I don't think it's okay, but does it surprise you that those are my wife's like childhood crushes on the X-Men?
Yes.
Really?
I mean, not
surprising? Not, from Sarah?
Not Gambit. I get that.
Magneto, man. Magneto? He stands for something. He's a man of principles.
He's a man for asteroids. That's what he's a man for.
Exactly.
Floating space bases.
Jubilee being super happy. She'd be like, we're on Asteroid M. Magneto used to have an asteroid, and she's just like pumped.
Yeah.
Sunspot's like, that's insane. Yeah, no, I thought it was a great episode. Like, obviously, saddest animation ever. No, but like, it was both deaths.
So many Easter eggs in that made me super happy.
Like, both deaths were poignant. Both deaths were like handled well. Neither one of them seemed like they were going to happen. Especially when you're watching like an X-Men cartoon, you're like, both mm-hmm. guys are like in their element, doing their thing, like the train fight and like charging up the motorcycle and all that. You're like, yeah, this is fine. There was no like foreshadowing. It was not like next week one of the clones will die or whatever. It was like, you're just watching an X-Men cartoon. They're gonna beat the Sentinel up, and some people will get hurt. Whatever. That's how it goes down.
Yeah, no, they kill a lot of people.
Yeah, they kill most of the Morlocks.
Most of the Morlocks. You literally see the light go out of Callisto's eyes.
Yeah,
she's staring up at the sky, and like her eyes go dull and mad. You're just like, ugh, that's rough.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. What a wild twist. They're just like, hey, remember your continuity? Fuck that.
And honestly, I think that's the, outside of just two cool characters dying, that's the thing that I'm most excited about. Is I was just sort of like, oh,
there
cool.
aren't no rules anymore.
Yeah, you're not just going to be rehashing the Claremont runs from the 80s. Like, that's... We're into brave new territory, and apparently written by people who seem to know what they're doing, because that episode was really, really good, and so was Motendo. So the big divergence from the comics have been like two of the best parts of the five episodes so far.
Also with a little splash of Joss Whedon in there as Cyclops engaged in a psychic affair.
We have a special psychic rapport. Wait, you have a psychic rapport with Madeline too? I just reached out to her on the astral plane to see how she was doing. It's only been going on a month. You bastard Cyclops. It's great. It's so great.
I love that she's way up on her high horse after having kissed Wolverine.
Yeah, she kissed Logan 5 minutes before. 5 minutes before. And then she's like, how dare you speak to Madeline with your brain? Like, exactly. That stuff I was like, this is peak X-Men.
That's peak X-Men.
Cyclops having a meltdown on television because he's not sure if, like, he's in love with his wife or his wife's clone.
Which they refused to settle amongst themselves. Jean came back and was like, get out. Madeline's like, I don't even know how long I've been here. Why do I have to fuck this?
I'm not even sure I'm the clone. Like, we're not sure when the switch happened.
Exactly.
Get out of here, Madeline. But you're the actual mother of my child. I said get out.
Like, yep.
Don't worry. We're sending your child into the future.
With Bishop.
Thank God we don't need to worry about that. Mm. Our child. We'll let Bishop raise him in the future.
If he doesn't die.
Yeah, exactly. If we hope there's a cure for his weird, sinister, Mr. Sinister disease. Mm-hmm. And there was, and he comes back, and it's Cable. Bang, bang, bang. Giant guns.
Who could have seen that? So many pouches.
It's real good, though, John. I feel you did, like, I don't know how.
What is it on these days?
It's on Disney. They own it. They own the X-Men now.
That's true.
But
they bought Fox just to get that back.
Yeah, this is one of the major Simpsons and X-Men. I feel we're like Simpsons probably number one, but I'm sure the X-Men movies made a lot of money and it's a really big IP. I think that those are like Simpsons. I feel is probably like number one on the acquisition chart, but like
sure.
X-Men can't be that far down as an IP. Like tons of cartoons, tons of movies, Wolverine, like Deadpool, all of them like.
It was totally not part of Marvel?
No. Fox had the X-Men, and Sony Fantastic had Spider-Man, Four. And then right, Disney right, had right. everybody else. Oh, yeah, yeah, and Fantastic Four.
Fox had Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Huh.
Those are two things they wanted back, X-Men and Fantastic Four.
Yeah. And then they just wanted The Simpsons.
Simpsons and Futurama, little bonuses, but I think there's more money in X-Men.
No, I think there's more money on The Simpsons. I think The Simpsons is just like a perennial cash cow.
And
like,
it's also international. You forget like they have so many good translations. And I heard a bunch of people say, like multiple people with different languages say their translation of The Simpsons is way funnier than English.
Yeah.
Like Spanish speaking people are like intense about it being better.
Yeah. Oh, and the fact that it's not just Spanish, like there's a Spain translation. There's a South American translation.
Yeah.
Like the jokes are also localized.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those X-Men movies have, you know, popped a billion.
Probably, but I'm sure like Simpsons has well over $1 billion and it's still like just a show that has been on for 30 something years that you can just keep banking out and just keep making money for. Like,
I'm just saying I think it's closer than.
Here's why I think it was The Simpsons is because Disney Plus gets The Simpsons, what, like a day after it comes out? That's every week the new episode of Simpsons is on Disney Plus. Every single week. That's a reason to be subscribed to Disney Plus. Whereas like a movie once in a while, I'll subscribe, I'll unsubscribe or whatever. But you're like, The Simpsons is one of the most watched shows. And like the episodes come out, I want to say the next day. Like Simpsons is out on Sunday, Monday, the new Simpsons is on Disney. And that is like, that's worth some money. Anyway.
Sure. Yeah. No, I'm not saying The Simpsons isn't. I'm just saying.
X-Men's huge. Like I said, I think it would be one X-Men Simpsons, two X-Men. That's me. Anyway.
Hi. Thanks for sticking around to the very end of this show. That means you're our number one fan. As our number one fan, maybe you're wondering a way that you can show your support for this. We've set up a few ways, and the boys are going to tell you about it now.
If you like this show, you might know other people that like the show, or maybe they'll like some of the other stuff that we're doing on the website. If that's the case, you can tell them all about it using all of the social networks like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're on all of those, or you could just, you know, send people links directly to the website. Or if you live in a world without the internet and you only listen to podcasts, you can tell people about it with your human mouth. There's other ways we could support us, John.
If your interest in supporting us extends to the financial section, you might consider patreon.com/9to5cc. If you go there, you can get perks like early content, you can get your questions answered on the air, and you could get extra art.
We've been doing this show for a long time, so we kind of know what we're doing. Not really.
9to5.cc, podcasts, blogs, and comics, made in Montreal since 2011.